So imagine you're just like staring down this massive mountain of raw interview transcripts. If you've ever actually been in that position, you know exactly the flavor of terror I'm talking about.
Oh, it is a very specific kind of nightmare.
Right. You're sitting there with, I don't know, hundreds of pages of people talking, and somewhere buried deep in that text is your thesis. It's your groundbreaking findings. Basically, your entire qualitative research project is just trapped in there.
And the clock is ticking, usually.
Exactly. And the temptation, especially lately with all these new tech tools, is to just take all those PDFs and Word docs, dump them into a generic AI prompt, and just beg the machine to find the themes for you, just so you can finally go to sleep.
Which I have to say is probably the fastest way to completely destroy your academic rigor.
Yeah.
I mean, you might save a few hours of reading, sure, but you effectively hollow out the entire purpose of qualitative research, which is, human interpretation.
And that tension is exactly what we're exploring today. So, welcome to the deep dive. We are looking into a platform called QualintelOS today.
Which is quite an interesting tool.
It really is. It claims to tackle this exact nightmare of qualitative data analysis, but it positions itself as, and this is a fascinating phrase, cognitive scaffolding.
Right, cognitive scaffolding.
Yeah. The promise is basically that it doesn't replace your human thought, but it provides a structural framework to support it.
So, to evaluate if that claim actually holds up, I think we need to approach this through a very specific lens today.
Okay, I like that. What's the setup?
Let's say you are the overwhelmed postgraduate student who just discovered this platform and thinks, all your late night prayers have been answered.
Oh, I can definitely play that role. I've been that stressed out grad student.
Perfect. And I will step into the role of the rigorous, deeply skeptical PhD supervisor.
The one who terrified me during office hours. Sir.
Exactly. Because my primary objective here is to interrogate whether this software can genuinely meet the unforgiving microscopic standards of actual academic examiners.
I love that setup. Because if you are that student, you've probably already tried the traditional routes and just found them completely lacking.
Well, before we dissect what Qualintel actually does, I think we need to understand why the current solutions are giving supervisors actual nightmares right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because for years, the gold standard for this work has been software like NVivo, right?
Yes, legacy platforms.
But using those often feels like buying a phenomenally expensive, highly complex filing cabinet. Like, you can organize your data beautifully.
You can color code your text in 50 different shades.
Exactly. But the software doesn't actually reason with you. It just sits there, completely passive, waiting for you to do literally 100% of the heavy lifting.
And see, from a supervisor's perspective, that passive filing cabinet was entirely acceptable.
Really? Even though it took months.
Yes. I mean, it was tedious for the student, certainly, but it was methodologically safe.
Yeah.
The software wasn't injecting its own bias into your work.
I see.
The nightmare scenario you mentioned earlier only really began with the explosion of generic AI.
Right, which is where the desperate student turns to something like ChatGPT.
Exactly.
But feeding your qualitative data into a generic chatbot is sort of like hiring an overeager, highly caffeinated intern who just desperately wants to please you, even if it means totally making things up.
That's a great analogy because a generic AI doesn't know your specific code book.
It has no idea what it's looking at.
No concept of what data saturation actually means for your particular study.
Yeah.
It essentially just scans the internet for generic word patterns and carelessly slaps them onto your highly nuanced, deeply personal transcripts.
And Qualintel seems to have recognized that exact vulnerability, right? Because their core architecture is built around this philosophy they call researcher-led.
Yes, and that's crucial. The platform is designed specifically for people who cannot afford to get the methodology wrong.
So we're talking postgraduate researchers, masters, and PhD candidates.
Independent consultants, program evaluators. I mean, think about it. If an independent evaluator brings a set of AI-generated themes to a nonprofit funding board without a mathematically defensible audit trail
They lose their credibility.
and potentially their funding, and if you bring those same unverified themes to a thesis defense, you fail.
Period. Okay, so the platform has to be fundamentally different from just a basic text analyzer.
But have to understand the underlying philosophy of the research. So, Qualintel OS is actually programmed to support seven distinct qualitative methodologies.
Oh, wow, seven.
Yes, we're talking about frameworks like reflexive thematic analysis, grounded theory, Interpretive Phenomenological Analysis, which is often just called IPA.
Okay, let's pause there for a second, because throwing around terms like IPA can sound a bit like we're just reading a syllabus to people.
Fair point.
What does it actually mean for a piece of software to, like, understand interpretive phenomenological analysis?
Well, it means the software recognizes that you aren't just looking for frequent keywords. IPA is about deeply exploring how a specific individual makes sense of a major life experience, say, surviving a severe illness.
So it's super personal.
It's intensely personal and interpretative. Huh. So if software understands that methodology, it knows not to just aggregate data into broad sweeping generalizations.
Right.
Instead, it helps the researcher track the profound, nuanced meaning within single cases before looking across them.
Oh, I get it.
The fact that the platform differentiates between that and, say, a broad content analysis signals to an examiner that the structural differences between these approaches are actually being respected.
That makes total sense in theory. But as the skeptical student, now I have to ask about the mechanics here.
Go ahead.
If this software is not relying on generic internet patterns to analyze the data, where on earth is it getting its instructions from?
That brings us to what might be the most critical feature of the entire platform. They call it the anchoring system.
Anchoring system, okay.
Qualintel operates on the premise that your specific intent as a researcher must drive every single operation.
Meaning, before I even think about uploading my audio files or my Zoom transcripts, the AI needs to read my homework. Like, I have to teach it what my study is about.
Exactly. You upload your foundational documents first.
So, like, my research proposal?
Your proposal, your interview guide, your theoretical framework, or even the grading rubric provided by your university.
Oh, the rubric, too. That's smart.
Very. The system processes all of this context. It essentially queues these documents up and anchors all of the subsequent AI assistance strictly to your specific methodology and intent.
So it's sort of like giving a bloodhound a very specific scent before letting it loose in a forest.
That's exactly it.
You're basically telling the AI, do not bring me generic observations about leadership. Mm-hmm. I am only looking at this data through the specific theoretical framework of, you know, transformational leadership in rural healthcare settings that I outline in this proposal.
And that constraint is everything. The AI is no longer looking for broad linguistic patterns. It is actively looking for evidence that speaks directly to your distinct research questions.
Okay, let's follow the data's journey then, because the transition from setting up rules to actually coding text is usually where things fall apart for me.
It's the messy part.
Yeah. And just gathering all the recordings is a headache in itself, but it looks like the platform allows you to connect your Zoom or Fathom accounts securely.
Yes, through an OAuth connection.
Right, meaning it just pulls in your cloud recordings and transcripts automatically. Or if you're old school, I guess you can manually upload standard text files, Word docs, or those VTT caption files.
Regardless of how the raw data enters the system, it all passes through the same workflow. And this workflow is where the cognitive scaffolding concept is really put to the test.
See, this is where I want to push back a little bit as the student.
Let's hear it.
Once I build my codebook, so the list of themes I'm looking for and I run the transcripts through, the platform surfaces what they call candidate segments.
Right.
So it finds pieces of text that semantically match my codes. But if the machine is finding the quotes and suggesting where they belong, hasn't it already taken over the interpretation?
It's a valid concern.
Like, isn't it biasing me by deciding what is relevant before I even read it?
That is the exact trap generic AI falls into. And it is why Qualintel implemented a non-negotiable rule within their interface.
Which is what?
Absolutely nothing gets coded without human confirmation.
Oh, nothing at all.
Nothing. The system acts as a highly advanced retrieval engine. It surfaces the candidate segment and says essentially, based on your proposal, this paragraph seems related to your code on structural barriers. Do you agree?
And then I have to do what?
You, the researcher, must manually click to accept or reject every single piece of evidence.
Okay, so it forces a human bottleneck. It retrieves the possibilities, but I actually have to provide the analytical validation.
Precisely. The interpretation stays entirely in your hands.
That makes a lot of sense.
Generic AI tries to take over the wrong part of the work by doing the thinking for you. This platform takes over the mind-numbing busy work of retrieving and organizing the data, but it forces you to remain the analytical engine.
Because I still have to read that suggested quote and decide if it truly captures the lived experience of the participant.
Yes. You can't just auto-approve everything.
Okay. I can see how that saves weeks of dragging a digital highlighter across the screen, but coding the data is really only half the battle.
Writing it up is the other half.
Yeah. And any grad student will tell you that the write-up phase, which usually happens at like 3 a.m. when you are totally running on fumes, is where bias quietly creeps into your work.
Because fatigue makes you sloppy.
Exactly. You find one participant who is incredibly articulate, whose quotes perfectly align with your thesis, and suddenly their voice is doing 90% of the talking for your entire data set.
Which is a massive red flag for any examiner reading the final paper.
It's so embarrassing when they point that out. But Qualintel apparently addresses that with a tool called the Quality Checker.
I was very impressed by this feature.
What's fascinating is that it's built directly into the thematic synthesis editor. So it isn't a separate tool you run after you finish writing. It actually scans your draft in real time as you're typing.
And as a supervisor, the specific metrics it flags are what stand out to me. It actively hunts for the exact bias you just mentioned, single voice over reliance.
So, like, imagine typing up your findings section, and a subtle warning appears on your screen alerting you that participant 3 currently accounts for 62% of your citations.
That real-time mirror would save so many students from a brutal review board meeting.
It really forces you to stop, look at your draft, and consciously ensure participant diversity.
But it goes beyond just counting quotes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it also flags absent codes, or what they call a priori codes,
yeah,
that you just haven't differentiated enough.
Let's unpack that term for a moment for those listening. An a priori code is a theme or category you decided you were going to look for before you even started analyzing the data.
So usually based on existing literature you read beforehand.
Right. If you declared in your anchored proposal that you were going to look for a specific a priori code, and then you reach the write-up phase without ever mentioning it, the quality checker flags the omission.
Wow. It also checks for research question alignment gaps.
Which is critical.
Yeah. It asks, are the paragraphs you're currently drafting actually answering the specific question you posed in your original proposal? Or have you gone off on a fascinating but entirely irrelevant tangent?
It demands what is known in qualitative research as analytical modesty.
Okay, wait. How does software measure modesty?
By analyzing the strength of your claim against the size of your evidence base.
Oh, that is clever.
Analytical modesty means ensuring you aren't making sweeping, universal claims based on a tiny data set of, say, 5 interviews.
Right, because you can't say everyone feels this way if you only talk to 5 people.
Exactly. The system helps ensure your tone matches the qualitative reality of your study. And getting these warnings while you are actively drafting means you can adjust your framing immediately.
Instead of having your supervisor tear the draft apart 3 weeks later.
Which saves us both a lot of time and tears.
But, I mean, writing the draft from scratch is still incredibly daunting. The platform includes a feature called the Report Writer, and I will admit my alarm bells were ringing when I saw that.
Why is that?
I immediately thought, okay, this is where it just writes the thesis for you. Like, it just spits out the final paper. But the mechanism is actually much more restrained.
It has to be restrained. Otherwise, the entire chain of academic integrity just collapses.
Yeah.
So how does the report writer actually function?
Well, it reads the research design and that grading rubric you anchored the system with earlier, right? And it auto-detects your specific word count targets and section requirements.
Okay.
Then it drafts the structural skeleton of each section. The introduction, the lit review, the methodology, the findings. But here's the crucial part.
I'm listening.
It builds those sections strictly around the specific evidence that you manually confirmed earlier.
Ah, so it's placing your validated quotes into a logical sequence.
Yes, exactly. It inserts the accepted quotes and provides the subheadings, but it leaves the analytical prose, the actual meaning-making part, entirely blank for you to write.
So it quite literally provides the scaffolding and you provide the building.
Yeah, and it does this while remaining methodology aware. Just wild.
Because different types of qualitative research require different reporting standards.
Right.
If you are conducting reflective thematic analysis, you might need to follow the RTARG guidelines. Or if you're running interviews or focus groups, examiners often expect you to follow CORQ.
CORQ being the consolidated criteria for reporting qualitative research.
Correct.
It's basically a strict 32-item checklist examiners use to ensure you aren't just making things up as you go.
Exactly. And the report writer understands those specific frameworks and structures your skeleton draft to meet those exact reporting standards.
So it handles the structural compliance, and you can focus entirely on the intellectual meaning.
Which brings us to the final hurdle.
The final boss.
The examiner. The student has finished writing. The draft looks great, the structural guidelines are met, but the examiner is sitting across the table. arms crossed.
Staring at a perfectly polished document and thinking, did a large language model just write this entire thing?
Yes. How does a researcher actually prove their innocence in a world where AI-generated text is literally everywhere?
This is where we separate the serious academic infrastructure from the generic tech toys, I think.
In qualitative research, trustworthiness cannot be an afterthought. It can't just be a toggle switch in the settings menu.
No, it has to be baked into the architecture of the platform.
Right. And because the researcher was forced to manually confirm or reject every single piece of evidence during the coding phase, the software has been quietly constructing a methodology-aware audit trail in the background the whole time.
So every time I clicked accept on a quote or merged two codes together or revised a theme, the system timestamped that decision.
Yeah.
And it attributed it directly to me as the human researcher.
Which is exactly what examiners want to see. They do not just want to read your findings. They want to be able to trace every single claim in your final report all the way back to the raw original data.
And QualIntel builds that granular paper trail implicitly as you work.
And extracting that paper trail is brilliantly simple, isn't it?
It is. They offer this one-click submission package. You basically just hit export, and it generates a single comprehensive ZIP file.
Very convenient.
And you can even choose to format the outputs in standard academic styles like APA 7, Harvard, Chicago, or Vancouver, which honestly just removes another layer of formatting friction that nobody likes dealing with.
But the contents of that ZIP file are what truly matter to me as a supervisor. That export is essentially a supervisor trust pack.
Yeah. So inside that file, you get your complete evidence pack showing exactly which quotes are tied to which codes. You get your full evolving codebook. And crucially, you get an auto-generated AI disclosure statement.
Which is massive right now. Transparency is the new currency in academia.
For sure.
Examiners and review boards now demand explicit disclosure statements. We need to know precisely which AI tools were used, exactly how they were applied to the data, and most importantly, where the human element remained supreme.
And having a system-generated statement detailing those exact boundaries is just invaluable.
It really is.
The ZIP file even includes a reflexivity template, which prompts you to reflect on your own biases during the process, and a how-to-use guide designed specifically for the examiner explaining how to actually navigate your audit trail.
You're essentially handing your supervisor a bulletproof vest and saying, go ahead, try to find a methodological hole in my work.
Yeah, good luck, right?
Because providing that level of interrogatable evidence demonstrates a profound respect for methodological rigor. It proves you haven't just hallucinated a set of findings. You have engineered a defensible analytical process.
Which is vital not just for grad students, but for professional program evaluators and nonprofit impact teams, too.
Oh, absolutely.
They need to prove to their funders that their community interventions are actually working based on real human feedback. And making this accessible seems to be a priority for the company.
How so?
Well, they operate on a tiered system, starting with a free plan for students who just want to anchor their proposal and get some AI assistance building their initial codebook.
Though to get the full cognitive scaffolding, like the evidence retrieval, the real-time quality checker, and that critical supervisor trust pack export researchers do need to move to the paid tiers.
Yeah, that's true. But importantly, those tiers are scaled for actual academic budgets. It goes from individual student licenses up to departmental and enterprise agreements that include, you know, institutional data processing compliance.
It really frames a completely different relationship with technology.
It does. The overarching takeaway here for you listening is that AI in qualitative analysis should never, under any circumstances, replace your voice.
The moment it does, you are no longer doing research. You were just summarizing text.
Right. And tools like this represent a paradigm shift. They allow the machine to bear the crushing weight of structural organization and data retrieval.
Which ideally allows the unique human analytical voice to shine through with far more clarity.
Because you aren't completely exhausted from shuffling digital index cards around a screen for 3 weeks straight at 3 a.m.
Exactly. Which honestly brings up a rather profound implication for the future of our field.
Oh, what's that?
Well, if these platforms can successfully eliminate the tedious, mind-numbing busy work of qualitative analysis,
if the filing cabinet is finally doing the heavy lifting,
will future academic examiners and funding boards begin to demand an even deeper, more profound level of human interpretation from our research?
Oh, wow.
Think about it. If they know we had all of this extra cognitive energy spared by the software, the baseline expectations for human genius are going to rise.
That is a staggering thought. It means the next time you find yourself staring down that terrifying mountain of raw transcripts, you aren't just looking for a tool to help you survive the climb.
No, you're not.
Because if you have the scaffolding, you might actually be expected to build a castle once you reach the top.